Good morning.
Hey Kurt, how's it going? Hey Jakob.
Hey guys,
Go
see
ahead,
another.
Kurt. Sorry, Kurt, I cut you off.
No, you're good. It's fine. Hey, Jakob.
Hey Kurt.
Think we're kind of a light crew today, although I think Ian will be here. Jakob, did you see that I created, I think, two tickets, one yesterday and one today? I'm gonna pull up my screen. I'm just digging around.
I don't think I've seen them.
Okay. Well, one I like just sent, so that makes sense, but okay. One is this cancellation from an Alma library that the whole request went kind of sideways, because it encountered this like couple 500 errors. And I'm not sure, this doesn't look like the same one that we had seen previously, Kurt, where it's like a huge error message that's like I don't know, gigantic, but I'm not sure if this is like an Alma to reshare issue. But after the request was canceled by the requesting library, it proceeded to go to all of the lenders in the ROTA. But of course, messaging was broken because it was in a canceled state, a terminal state in the requesting library, which is an Alma library, and they can't accept messages in that state. So, anyway, Jakob, I was just hoping you would take a look and see if this seems more brokery related or more reshare related.
So hold on. So Alma Library has sent out cancellation.
Yeah, so this request was created, and we get through all the suppliers and blah, 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 blah. And the initial request is sent to this partner, and this is just the original request. But before they even respond, the requesting library submitted a cancellation request, but it like airs out immediately. It failed to send the ISO message.
Is that an error message from ModRS we're seeing there?
No, that's like a network connection error, right? I think maybe he's re restarting ModRS because of that connection leak. Maybe this happened when the ModRS was down, or maybe there was some other network outage on that cluster we already saw. Ian would need to look into this, but it's this message is a message from Okapi that it cannot connect to ModRS for some reason, right? So I mean, it would be good to investigate why, but whatever the reason is, that was the problem. But when you say, Mallory, that this cancellation came, it came before it got the response, or?
Well, I
Which
meant,
mean
I don't think that the, go ahead.
has it already selected the supplier?
Yeah, so selected this supplier and sent the, the outgoing request
Request,
message. But
okay.
I think before the supplying library, like before there was any response from them, the re requesting library VIT submitted this cancel action. And yeah, so then it errs. So I guess like VIT's message to NMUS never made it. But then eventually the request aged out of NMUS's reshare tenant. Like it was 6 days. And we continue to see like more errors from the unfilled message. But then the broker continues to send the request on to other. Here's that idle message that goes unfilled. And then, yeah, so then the broker selects another supplier and keeps sending it down through the rest of the rota. But they all eventually unfill because it's actually, I think this whole thing was broken. Yeah. Okay, so like I think like this is a supplier trying to message the requester, but I assume that that failed because the yeah problem because VIT already canceled it, so Alma can't accept any messages in that state. So I don't think these suppliers even were aware that the requester wasn't getting their messages.
Okay.
Do you know what I
Well,
mean?
so I mean, yeah, we can check if there is some logic that we can do. I mean, so if I understand this correctly, they sent a cancellation. That cancellation failed because of the MotherOS problem. And
Yeah.
that failure triggered selection of the next supplier, right?
Yeah. Well, eventually it aged out of the supply and libraries tenant because they didn't get the cancellation.
But who sent that aging out?
Yeah. So if we look at this, I just will show you real quick in here. This is the first supplier in the rota for this request, and they never got
They never
the
received the cancellation, of course. Yes.
right. They never received the cancellation. Eventually, they send, 5 days later, they send this automated idle message, but it gets the error because it's closed in VI. Yeah, and then it goes on to the next supplier in the rota, regardless.
But why would it go to the next supplier at this point? That I don't know for sure, because
I don't know. It was.
okay. Because can we look at this aging message? How does that look like? In the broker
Oh,
log.
let me idle. It should be.
Unfilled.
This is.
I see. It's an unfilled message. Yes. Okay. So yes. So that will indeed trigger a selection of the new supplier, because from the brokers, the broker does not register that cancellation. It just forwards it. It doesn't really do any state management when it comes to cancellation. I don't think, I would have to check the code, but I don't think there's anything in the broker that marks that transaction as canceled, right? So it sort of relies on the supplier to be able to receive that cancellation message. And I
Right.
think, yes, and I think we decided that if the cancellation is sent to a Yeah, let me double check that I can have also managed to check it. But yes, I see what happens. I mean the because normally if there was no cancellation, we agreed that this aging should trigger selection of the new supplier, right?
Right. I
Or
think like I think that the cancel from Alma, like, I think that some of the logic might be tricky because if they don't agree, if they don't agree to a loan condition from a reshare tenant, it should be a cancel and continue. But in this case, this was just a requester initiating their own cancellation. So I maybe there's some like logic going haywire between the two different workflows.
Maybe, but or maybe the problem is just that I'm just thinking about this case when things are aging, right? I mean,
Right.
because it's sending the unfilled message. What's the logic here? Because it did it have it, it not, did not ship anything, did it?
No, and it should after that unfilled, if this requester aged out and it goes unfilled, it should go to the next supplier.
Yes, okay. So that part you're okay with. So basically that
Yeah.
part works. The problem here is, of course, because that cancellation failed, it got never registered. And because I would assume if it did register, we would put this transaction in the canceled state. And then
Right,
we
yeah.
it would never continue. But because it never registered, we would need to check if there is a way for us to say. Problem is that, you know, when because this is like a distributed system, unfortunately. So when that situation happens, when we cannot deliver a message, like in this case, because something is broken, the system does not respond. I mean, what should we do? Because that we don't know whether that message was accepted or not. We don't know whether the supplier registered that cancellation or not. In this case, it didn't, but it could have. So I just wonder what should we do. I mean, we could try to resend it, but that's gonna make it very complex. Or we could just assume that if there is an error, then it's not accepted. But what did we reply to the problem? That's the other, because you know the problem is that we did tell Alma, hey, your cancellation failed, but Alma just doesn't care, you know.
Yeah, 'cause Alma, like I said, Alma does it just like does not accept any messages after it is considered a terminal state, which is kind
It's
of
not even,
like
it's not even, but it's not even a message, you know. Like when they send this cancellation, we actually send them a confirmation for the cancellation. So you can see that this cancel message, when it fails, it will be for like the response to Alma will be an error response. Like, I'm sorry, your cancellation failed.
right.
And Alma should real like normally, I think so. I mean, you can check, but if you do like cancel, if you search for cancel, then try to see what is the response to Alma. So this is like the
Where's the
like,
first? This is the first one, right? Yeah.
this
Okay.
is the first one. Then there should be something, yeah, go down, message supplier, yeah, so that fails. Then we do, oh, hold on, no, I can keep up. Confirm requester message. So the message failed to confirm requester message, HB error 500s. And I think, try to see down if there is an outgoing message. No, that's it. I think we need to check what happens at this point. I think we, because you know, go up a little bit, right? So at this point, when it does this confirm requester message, then that's gonna be like a confirmation failure to Alma. So I think at this point Alma should realize, hey, that cancellation failed. I mean, I cannot close this request because it's failed. You know, I didn't actually close it.
So this might actually be like some development for
Yeah,
the
I
ex-labor
mean,
side.
we can try to work around it, but yes, because I think they are just closing that request no matter what. Like, even though the cancellation failed, they just close it. And that's not good. Not to mention that this protocol, actually, if I'm not mistaken, I just need just to do a quick dive. We're spending a lot of time on this, I know, but let me just see. Because I do think that this protocol is slightly. Yeah. You know, in this protocol, this cancel method is actually a bit more complex than what those ALMA people are doing, because norm so there are two things in this protocol, which makes it very strange protocol, but that's the way it works. So there is, when you send a message, you get this immediate confirmation whether the message was accepted or not. So in our case, we that confirmation is like, no, the message errored out. So that's already what they should know, that the message was not delivered. But even if it was delivered, they should not cancel until they get a message back which confirms the cancellation, because maybe the item was already shipped, you know. And in this protocol, it works by that other supplier sending this cancel response message. And we actually do use this in Resure. So when you get a cancellation, you need to confirm it, right, in Resure. And that's exactly when it sends that cancel response message. So actually, just because you send a cancel and that cancel was accepted, it doesn't mean that the thing was canceled. You need to wait for the cancellation response, which says, okay, I did really cancel this. Because otherwise the item might be already in shipping or something, you know, and they cannot cancel. So yeah, I think there's a bug in Alma in either case. But in our case, we actually tell them very early on that the cancel was just a failure. So I think there's a bug in Alma. So they should fix it. But we can also try to see if we can work around this. But what should be the workaround? The workaround could be that if we see this cancellation failed, we could set some flag on that transaction. Just to prevent, you know, just to prevent resuming it. I think we can do that. We can try to see. It's gonna be a workaround, right? So it's gonna be a situation like somebody has sent a cancellation, and right now we just assume that the peers are gonna do the right thing. So the supplier is gonna cancel. We're gonna and at some point that it's gonna send this cancel response, and then the supplier will accepted, and there's not going to be any more sort of action on this request, on this transaction. But in this case, it's not the case, right? Because this cancellation goes nowhere, it fails, and then the supplier keeps on sending that unfilled message, which triggers this resume. What we could do, I think, as a workaround again, is that we can mark this transaction broken or something when this cancellation fails. And then when we get this aging response from the supplier or any other response from the supplier, we would say, hey, we're just gonna ignore it, because you know this that there was the con this cancellation on that request and on that transaction, and we don't even know if the requester is even active anymore. But we could do something like that, you know, to work around this. But the core issue is that Alma is just broken. Like they should really. First of all, they should wait for the confirm. They should acknowledge the confirmation, and then they should also wait for the console response.
Right, because like I don't know, building in a workaround for this is like hard because like we can't test it unless you know like there's no way to trigger like this failure, right? Like, and so then I'm not really sure how we could.
Well, we could do this workaround a bit less, maybe. We could make this workaround work in two cases. In one case, you can test. So, one case could be if we get a cancel from the requester on the transaction, we could set some sort of flag on this transaction saying that, hey, there is actually a cancel pending. And then, so if you happen to receive any messages from suppliers, just don't do anything because there is a cancel pending. And until we get a proper cancel response, we're not going to remove this flag. And that would essentially mean that if you get a cancellation and in ModRS you don't approve it, that cancellation, then that transaction is in this maybe cancel state. And then in that maybe console state, if there is some aging or whatever, we will just ignore it. Anything that comes, we will just ignore it. I think that should work, but again, but it just means that
guys, okay, so I lose your audio.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's how we should. Let me think about this, Mallory, because we don't want to mess anything up. So I'll create a ticket for the workaround, but I also respond to you there. You know, like what is it that we would expect Alma to do? I mean, maybe Alan can pass that on to Exlibris.
Okay. Why does this not think it knows you? Okay. Well, yeah. I'm gonna try one more time just to see if I can. I did t ping you on the ticket, so you should have got a message anyway. There you are. Okay. Thank you for taking a look. I just thought that one was strange. I know we've spent a lot of time. There's one other ticket that I mentioned you on, which is about the multiple volume request, which is kind of funky in Alma. It's like adding when they send a multi-volume or fill a multi-volume request, it's adding this weird condition thing instead of a table with the volumes. So this ticket kind of describes that. It was in relation to you asking me about Jason's document about protocol deviations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what should we do about this, because I think the weird loan condition thing, we can probably fix it. I think it's probably some bad code in ModRS which doesn't check if the condition has any value. That's why it creates that condition. But what do we do with those multiple items? Because in ModRS, it's a whole mess, you know, like there's at least three different options for sending multiple item request. The way it's encoded in that item ID field is actually, very, like it's got at least three different options. With the comma thing, this, for example, doesn't work for the ZFL people because they have commas in the in those record IDs.
Yeah, and I think we switched it to using like
Yes, exactly.
hashes for ours.
Yeah, so we switched it to use hashes. So either like we would need to add some setting to the broker to tell the broker, hey, if we wanted to keep this, right? If we wanted to support this, or maybe we could actually do it in the Alma shim. I'm just thinking. So if Alma Rapido always sends this using a comma, we could just do it in this Alma shim.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering is if we could just add it to their workaround stuff is like if it has this weird loan condition other and like is there some logic that we could base because they don't have loan conditions, they don't have conditional workflows anyway. So it's bizarre to me that they're sending this field at all, but basically, if we get a condition from Alma, we should just treat it based as a multi-volume request, probably.
Yeah, aside that ticket to me, I'll investigate. I think Jason isn't here. I don't remember top of my head, but I think when you have a comma, maybe Kurt knows. If you have a comma in ModRS, it actually doesn't mean a multi-volume request. It just means that there's gonna be a call number and an item ID and an item barcode. And potentially a name for the item sent in that field. So the
Yeah,
comma has a diff.
I don't remember, unfortunately, what the specifier is for that. I'd have to look at the
Yeah, try to check after the call, Kurt, and drop a note on that ticket.
Okay.
But I
You wanna.
think I just recall that that's what it does, right? So actually, the comma has a different meaning. It doesn't separate the item IDs, but it just separates parts of the different elements of the item identifier. So like it can transfer both the barcode and the call number, or just and maybe a name for the item for the volume. So it's really fucked up. And I think the way ModRS does it is that they put like a multi-vol column in the item ID to indicate that something is a multi-volume. Now, we will never make it work with Alma. This is we would I think well we need to shim a lot between the two systems, so we would need to also understand exactly how I never really remember how ModRS does it, just because it's so messed up. But maybe Kurt, maybe just put a note, okay? If you could look at the code, and I'm interested in those two cases, right? How is multi-volume encoded, and what is the comma used for?
Yeah,
When
I
we
can do that.
just have a comma in the item ID field, because my recollection is that it's just going to treat it as different parts of the, like different fields, basically.
Yeah, I'll take a look and see what it's doing. It's just
Whoa. Okay, thank you. Those were my two like new support issues, now that we've used like the whole meeting on that.
Yeah.
But do you want to move to Ian or to Kurt Jakob, or do you have updates you want to talk about first?
Well, I guess I think there is some good progress, but I still think we are sort of lagging behind a little bit when it comes to some elements of that roadmap that we put together, Mallory, or I put together, and you've been looking at. And I don't know what's the best way. So Jason is off, so obviously there's not going to be any progress on porting of the UI, which is probably okay this week, because Giannis is adding some functions related to notifications and conditions. That's based on some of the JSON's feedback. And then some additional filtering options. So we have those three tickets for Giannis, where he's working on item handling. It will be sort of related to what we just discussed with the way this is encoded and stuff, but we're going to make it very different, I think, in the broker, just not to mess up with this item ID field at all, because it's problematic, as we can see. So I think when that will be completed this week, when Jason gets back, can like make another push on that port. So we should have a lot of functionality already around. And I don't know where Adam is, because Adam is off this week, and he did not leave any sort of updates regarding the NSIP stuff. But I think he's been struggling a little bit, but he's been also very quiet, so it's hard for me to tell where the issue is exactly. I know that he updated the directory configuration for those new tenants that Ian has created. But again, I don't know whether that was successful or not, like whether that testing was successful. So that testing, that ANSIP testing, and testing those new tenants, that is currently stuck. And it's going to be stuck this week waiting for Adam. So I wonder if somebody can pick it up to resume this work. So that's one thing that is currently on hold. And the other thing is, I think, Kurt, we need to talk a little bit about the directory next steps. So I don't know exactly where are we there. I tried to use this directory on that Richard Two tenant. It seems to work at least, which is a success, I guess. But it's very basic functionality, right? I mean, we can create an entry and specify, I think, the name.
Right.
So I don't know exactly, and you had a ticket to kind of align the schemas. And how did that, remind me, how did it work?
So I am still doing that right now. I'm gonna have to change the way that it was originally implemented in the directory because we had basically had consortia as a separate endpoint to retrieve, and they were like consortia were like a separate entity than the entries were. Whereas in the looks like the broker is just the consortia, just like a type of entry, right? It just happens to have sub entries that belong to it. And that's fine. But I'm just changing that over. So I'll have to kind of redo the tests and stuff like that and all that. But at the same time, I'm also going to implement the protected field mechanism that I mentioned. I'll go ahead and make the which is the field name? The LMS config one. I'll go ahead and make that a protected field, so that we can see, so that we can go ahead and see that. So we'll have that mechanism in place, and we can actually see a proof of concept of that. So I'm hoping to have a rough cut of that done by the end of the day today. I might need to write some more tests, but I'm hoping I can have pass it off to Codex to expand the tests for me. But it's yeah, but it's nothing crazy, but it's coming pretty well. So,
I don't think the entire LMS config needs to be protected. I think it's just some fields.
okay, I mean,
Within the same scope.
it can work at whatever level we want it to, it'll just
Okay.
all be dynamic. So it's not like we have to like all we have to do is just put in that struct tag at whatever fields we want to protect, and we can just have it
Yeah, we
repeatedly go through then.
yeah, so we for sure need to have some protection for that API key. Because
Right.
right now Adam has just added it to the URL. So I think. And this is a bit non-standard, right? But I think we need to have something like an API key field, which is protected, and then add some code in the broker to splice it with the URL.
So that'll just be a field we add to the LMS config.
I think so. I think
Okay.
so. I don't know if there's anything else, but maybe you can check, Gert, by looking at the LMS adapter from Reacher. How is like when we are connected, because Folio uses API key, which is pretty non-standard, but what about other LMSs? How is the ANSIP authentication done for those other LMSs? Which
I mean,
of the
there are some that store like a username and password, I want to say, but I mean, all of us, we don't, we store it in the settings, because we have like a separate settings thing. But
So
if you.
check which ones are using the username and password, because and which fields does it go into in ANSIP, because in ANSIP there is this whole authentication input that can contain different values.
Right.
So let's check it, and then I would say, yeah, let's make all those fields that can potentially hold secrets protected.
So, are we then going ahead, moving forward with basically using the directory as our settings holding thing? Like, we're not going to
For
have like a
most
separate.
things, yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
when it comes to settings that are specific to an institution, especially like connectivity information for different kinds of endpoints, yeah, we're gonna move it all to directory.
Okay.
Maps, like things like mapping between locations, yeah, all of that will go to the directory entry.
Okay.
I think regarding the just like true settings, we'll just leave settings in the broker things that are like non-specific to institution. I don't know, like some sort of general behavior that you want to control for the whole deployment. But even then, some of it might actually end up being stored in that consortial entry. So at some point, that consortial entry will also become important because we'll want to keep some like consortial level policies or settings. So yeah, I mean the directory becomes also like a hierarchy for settings for the entire installation. So everything will essentially go there.
I
And
know that
we all, of
Jason
course.
had open questions about whether or not we were going to be approaching it that way or not. So, but it sounds like we're just kind of going to go ahead and do that. That's fine. Yeah, just along in the direction.
I think so. I think we're just gonna go and do that because there's really no other place. In this new model, the broker is not multi-tenant. I mean, it's multi-tenant, meaning that it's got this symbol for each row in the
Right.
database, right? For each
But it
paper
doesn't
request.
separate at the schema level, right?
No, it doesn't separate on the schema. It's just one big schema, right? And we would essentially need to replicate some sort of hierarchy for storing settings, which is kind of dumb because we already have it in the directory. So I don't really think that there is any choice.
That's fine. As long as we're on the same page about it.
I think it just needs to be like that. And then, of course, we always have a choice of deciding whether something goes into like a new schema field in that directory entry, like we did for the LMS config, or maybe it's like more freeform settings where we will just have some custom settings like we had in the old directory key value, right? And we can just specify some random stuff. But I think when it comes to things like ANSIP configurations, Z3950, of course, isolating 6 to 6, that needs to be part of the schema because that stuff is just something where we want to understand what a given field is. So I don't see a reason why we should be doing, key value pairs when there is some meaning behind the field. So yeah.
Okay.
But we'll probably allow, like I remember we did something like that for, I can't remember what it was, but it was like mapping some, setting some location filters and stuff like that. We did some custom fields for that. But I wouldn't worry about this yet. Okay, so Kurt's, yeah. You have some next steps, right? I mean, so like this directory, just kind of aligning that schema, finishing that, and then when you are done with this, maybe you could take a look at this ANSIP, like picking up this ANSIP testing from Adam while he's away.
Okay.
So just ping me when you are done with this, right? I mean, the ANSIP stuff. There's a test in the broker using Bruno, this Postman replacement. It's like an integration test, and that test already has some validation to check whether the ANSIP events happen and stuff and whether they were successful. So I mean that effectively needs to be run, and we need to understand why it fails, because it probably fails because I haven't heard from him that it actually worked.
Right. Okay. That should be interesting.
And then Ian, how are things going?
All right. I'm working on the MPALS demo thing. I've got the software installed on the Emerson thing. I need to add permissions to admin users. Like a little, I got a question for Wayne, but it's going okay. And
Is
then
that this, Ian?
that's this, yes.
So there will be a ILL. We'll have like the ILL request and ILL
Yeah.
supply apps here.
You don't see it now because, well, two reasons. One, I didn't push a webpack, and
Okay.
that's because the admin user doesn't have permissions to reshare stuff. And that is because the script we use to assign all admin permissions can't be run. There's like a config. So I don't know if Wayne cloned this or built it with Ansible, so I gotta figure that out. And if you just cloned it, then I'll just create permissions another way. Usually we use like an Ansible playbook to assign all the relevant permissions,
Okay.
but I'll figure it out either way. So I just gotta talk to him this morning, but it's only like 8:30 and he's in a meeting, I think, so I'm gonna give him a minute.
yeah. Well, I'll just say I'm excited about that work. So, and I'm sorry in advance for you that I'll probably have questions about how to do the demo once it's there. This is like, it's such a kind of unique combination of things that I'm just a little weary.
It might be kind of spicy. Okay, and then the other thing is I pushed like some not entirely significant CI change to moderate on the master branch and the build failed, so I got to figure that out. It's not related to the change I pushed, so the master build is failing again, and I gotta look at that.
Do we had a ticket for that. Do we need to open another one, or do you want me to reopen this, or is it di
No,
well, you,
it's not the
okay.
same thing, so I guess I'll open another one.
If you need to, or want to, I guess, but that sucks. I'm sorry.
So those are the two main things that I'm looking at.
Cool.
Oh,
Jakob
and
or
then
Kurt, yeah, go
hold on,
ahead.
one more thing. Jakob, you made some changes to the migration. That's great. So at some point we're gonna need to do some manual stuff when we upgrade the broker on Trove. So I guess just think about when you would want the broker updated.
Yeah, I mean, for now, Ian, maybe just I attached a like an example strept for provisioning users. So just look through it if we're on the same page. And I have also removed so basically that code that is in the broker, which sort of hard coded and it sets up the DB. I don't think that should ever be used in production. So I kept it only as a convenience for developers because it sucks for developers if they need to do a bunch of provisioning outside of the application because then it means that starting the application is just much harder. So I kept it, but I don't even allow this to be used from the Helm chart. I mean, you can force it from the Helm chart, but by setting up this DB provision environment variable, I mean that you can of course always do, but normally like you, but by just using the values file, you don't have access to it.
Yeah,
That's
that's
just
fine. I will easily not find that.
just to discourage, right? And
Sure.
you and so one thing that I think you should think a little bit about how do you guys want to do it in production. I think at minimum that runtime users should not have ability to create schemas. So unlike very unlike Folio, because I think that is a security risk. So it should be a user that so when you do provision that user outside of the application, then of course you need to create that schema. If it's a migration case, then you need to move the tables and then you need to change the ownership of those tables to that role that you're going to create and then give that role to the user, to this runtime user. And I would just look at the script, right? But I would just drop privileges from that runtime user. So that's in the simple case. If you want to push it harder, which I don't think you probably want, at least not in the first step, you will see that in that Helm chart, I have added a way to run that migration as a separate job in the Helm. And that is a bit more sophisticated setup where you take away any create privileges from the runtime user. So
Well,
that's like.
so it's kind of one-off that I would have to manually do this migration. So I was just planning on doing that when I set up the
Yeah.
user in the way that you requested.
Yes, exactly. Because you need to move the tables manually anyway, right? So, like, it doesn't really change much. So, just look at this provisioning script and then create your own script, which not only creates the roles, but also moves the tables and changes the ownership on those existing tables. Because that script that I provided just assumes this empty, like, initial setup. It doesn't assume the migration case, right? So, yeah, so that's what you.
So I have a script to do that, move the data already. So so I'm not worried about the changes that you made. I just want to make sure that we schedule it at some point so I don't forget, just because
Yeah.
it's like a, while it's
But that's
fresh.
more up to Mallory, I think. So Mallory, I
Yeah,
don't know, like when we want to
exactly.
schedule the
Yeah, it's not
trove.
a, it's not a rush. It's just like, it would be upgrading to the latest broker. So just, I just need to know, like, if there's stuff that they don't want, and if there's nothing, no reason not to do it, we could just schedule it in a couple weeks or whatever.
Well, should we, would it be possible, Ian, to apply that the latest broker to Trove test with the latest Moderus stuff that they're testing in Trove test right now? Because like maybe we could
Yeah.
just do both of those at the same time when
Yeah.
they're
So
ready to
we already
schedule it.
deployed RS to them, right? The 17,
That's
if
right.
I recall. So why don't we just upgrade the broker there as well? I'll make an issue and do that.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that would be great. And then they can just verify both, and we don't have to do two separate upgrade windows and yada yada yada. Okay. And I think this was partially related to, forget where that ticket was about the pull slips not printing. Or no. Yeah. This one. I think this is where we were talking about whether.
Supplier info, right? I mean, I think that
Yeah.
was one fix that I remember was done.
Yeah, so I think this is done. I was testing about different things yesterday with Alan. And so if this could be included in the broker upgrade, which I think it probably would, then I think that we're probably fine because we're now seeing the address here. So yeah, I'll close this broker ticket out, and then I think we'd be all ready to, or we'd want to include this in the Trove test upgrade.
Yeah, that sounds good. So Ian, just to confirm, so when you were setting up the on dev, just on the Trove dev, did you create this crosslink broker role?
No, I haven't done that on dev, because we did it the other way.
Okay, so how is it set up on dev right now?
It's using the same account as the Folio user, like how it is on prod and test right now. So we could do it there first, then do it.
It's using the same runtime user, but and that's the user that you, so you granted the schema ownership to that user.
Yeah.
Got it. So that's your choice. I mean, you could do the same, of course, but
Well, no, because
the
you're t we're, we want you want to create a new user, so I'll set it up to have the same way that you want it set up on test and prod, and then
just
do
look at
that.
that script because I differentiate between what I call a user and the role. So basically the way this has been modified now is that both this example script and also what the broker does internally for the local case, it creates a role called the same as the schema, so crosslink underscore broker, but it creates a non-login role. So it's just a role which is treated like a bag of permissions, you could say. It's not a user that you can specify for connection, right? It has no
Yeah.
password and no login. And then that role is granted to the current user.
Okay.
So that's, I think that's probably the cleanest approach because it means that you have a notion of, oh, okay, so this is like a permission, set of permissions to access the schema, and then you can grant it to whatever user you wish, including the existing user. So actually you wouldn't have to change the user, right? Just create that
Right.
schema and grant it to that runtime user, and then potentially drop some privileges from that user. Like a good option is probably to drop privileges for creating anything in the public for that user.
Right, but I need to I would need to do a different one for that because the Folio module will still do that crap. So, you know what I
But the
mean? So I
folio modules use the crosslink user? Or
no, they don't
no,
use the
it's
crosslink
no.
user. But if they're using the same user, so I would need to create a crosslink user, then grant that role to
Yeah.
the crosslink user.
Okay.
Which is
All
what
right.
I'll do.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. Guys, I've got to run. So I don't know. Is there anything else?
Think we covered everything.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You
Bye.
guys have a good one. Bye.
All right, bye, everyone. Bye.